What if you could live your bestest, most feminine pink life every day, all the time? That is what we are talking about today. Welcome to the Women of YouTube podcast. This podcast is hosted by me, Desiree Martinez. Every week, I'm going to be showing up in your earbuds to inspire you on your YouTube journey with killer interviews with women YouTube creators, deep dives into the inner workings of how YouTube works, and discussing all the things about YouTube culture and the impact it is having on our world. This podcast is brought to you in partnership with vidIQ, where they help you maximize your video's YouTube reach by studying titles, descriptions, tags, and playlists relevant to your subject matter, while also studying your competitors to help you know exactly what you should be doing for your YouTube growth. So if you're a female creator looking to grow your channel, level up your content, and learn from the best women creators on the platform to get you on your way to YouTube success and future-proofing your income, this is the perfect place for you. Let's do this. What's up, ladies? Welcome to an episode of Women of Video podcast. Super pumped to be in them earballs and hopefully those eyeballs if you're watching this over on Spotify. This is a really fun episode. So I met Molly on LinkedIn. And Molly is like living her most perfect, most beautiful, most blessed pink life. And she has found some really smart ways to curate a brand that's very specific to her, attracting who she wants and having slow, steady growth that is, she's like taking that to the bank. She's doing a lot of really smart things. She's living her best LinkedIn life, which is what my favorite thing to do is, of course. So we just dig into a lot of things. I think there's going to be really helpful and insightful for you in this episode. So make sure to listen all the way to the end because not a drop should be dropped. It's so good. So let's just do it. Let's go dive into the episode. I love talking with women that buck the system and tell people, hold my cotton candy. Okay. So I am so pumped for our talk today, Molly. Thank you so much for being on the Women of Video podcast.
Of course. How are you?
It's when we're recording this, it is snowing. It was so icy, snowy that my kids had a snow day. And so like dad is wrangling them and they're on a journey. You're on like a tirade because we've had like, we're off of Christmas break and then like they've had other snow days. And so I think they're kind of reaching that point of like, snow days are boring. And I'm like, yes, they are. Stop trying to make snow days happen. So my kids do this whole thing where they like turn their shirts inside out and sleep with their underwear backwards and like flush ice and put spoons under their pillows. I'm like, what happened to the snow dance? But they're on their vibe and it's what they're doing.
I grew up in Florida, so I get so much FOMO with snow days because I'm like, what are they like? Like, I want to know what a snow day is like.
What a sunshine day. There's too much sunshine outside and we just can't go outside. Is that a thing? I lived in Phoenix and it was kind of like that. Like it'd be so hot. You just kind of lay on the floor and wait for it to cool down.
I wish they gave us that in school. That would have been amazing.
That would have been probably very helpful. Okay. Molly, tell us what you create on the internet.
Sure. So I am a pink focused fashion content creator. I have also started branching out into lifestyle, food. I'm trying to do it all because I feel like I'm the type of person where I'm like, that looks cool. I want to do that too. And I let myself. And recently I left my full-time corporate job last year in March. And from then I just decided that I wanted to hit the ground running. So I also founded my own community called Fluent in Pink. I have always been very obsessed with the idea of community. I feel like the pandemic and everything kind of launched that too, because I missed people and I missed talking to people and I missed relating to people. So I launched my own community. I am also doing in-person events in LA, which I never thought would be a part of it. I just thought it would be a cute little community where everyone could chit chat, but now we are selling out events and I have them monthly and the demand is so high, I might even have to start doing them bi-weekly, which is something I truly never imagined so quickly. But that's my world right now. It's all pink.
Okay. So how does one get into being a pink content creator? I mean, besides obviously owning a lot of pink things and having like an affinity for it, walk us through the journey to becoming a pink content creator.
I think that really for me, it was very personal. It was very from within. It wasn't just, let me start wearing pink. I think because I grew up plus size, because I grew up first generation Latina, there were a lot of situations where I couldn't just have everything that I wanted whenever I wanted. So it was a lot of fulfilling my inner child. It was a lot of what dresses did I want when I was 8 that I couldn't get? What lifestyle did I want? What movie did I see where I saw, I want to be like that girl? How can I do that now? Because that's really what I've been focusing on. And I feel like a lot of people will say things like, pink isn't for you. It's not your color. It doesn't look flattering on you. And it's not just a fashion statement. It's really me being in tune with my femininity, me being in tune with being a woman and what that means. And it's taken years, if not decades, for brands to even branch out in sizing, let alone in sizing in the aesthetic that I dress in now. So it's almost like I never had the option to do this. I've always wanted to, but I've never had the option. And now that I get to, I just create content organically around what my life looks like. I do wear these dresses all the time. A lot of people don't believe me when I say that, but then I'll meet someone at a grocery store and they're like, oh my gosh, are you Molly? And I'm like, yeah, here's your proof. I do dress like this, because a lot of people just have a lot of things to say. And I feel like that's the hardest obstacle to get over when you are trying to create content that's true to you and that speaks to you and that means so much to you. So I really feel like it's just being you. And I know that that sounds so cliche and it's like, oh, but how do I actually be a pink content creator? But I really do feel like if it comes naturally, it'll just flow out. Like you said, it's not just buying a bunch of things. It's what you already own. It's what you already wear. It's how you already feel feminine and beautiful, because that's what I associate with the color pink. Everyone has their own relationship to it. And of course, last year's Barbie summer, this year's Mean Girls January did not make it difficult. It made it way easier. So I feel like that also helps when like society's on the same page too, especially now that the coquette trend and the bows are everywhere and it became a little bit of a meme, everyone putting like bows on burritos and things. So that part helps also.
Well, and I think it's sort of this idea, like when you think about like the Barbie summer, and then, you know, that's very much like the year of the woman. Like we had all the stuff with Taylor Swift. We've had all of the stuff with Beyonce. We've had, you know, so many things that have been focused on empowering women. And it's sort of like women owning femininity, even if it is, and as to use your words, a cliche kind of way. Because I, like my company name, like when you look at like my legal paperwork, my company is called Pink Media Inc. Like that's who I've been, because I've always loved pink. And I'm building this media company and does all these multiple brand things and all these different stuff. And I'm like, I don't want to hide behind being a woman. And there have been a lot of times in my professional life where I'm like, I probably should play this down. Like, I'm not going to be able to attract men. No one's going to take me seriously. But And I think a lot of that was just the time and the era. Like 15 years ago, 10 years ago, it was when you were something specific around like a color or a theme or a concept. It appeared as very gimmicky. And I love how you're like, I'm actually who I am all the time. And that's what makes me so unique as a content creator. And I think that bridging that is important. Like I was at the Creator Economy Live conference last week, as I talked about before we started recording. And one of the things that people were really talking about is when you're talking with creators, they have to have their unique selling proposition, but it has to be like true to who they are. It's one thing to be a lifestyle creator. It's one thing to be a vlogger. It's one thing to be a tech reviewer, but you have to have the thing about you that makes you truly unique and genuine in order for it to be sustainable and sellable and marketable. And I think that you're a fantastic example of all of those things, because you live, eat, and breathe it. And I think that it's very hard for women to lean into the things that make them unique. And I'd love to know what advice you have for women who are not sure what makes them unique or how to lean into their quirk to be effective.
This is a great question, because I've actually been asking myself this a lot. I feel like, especially when I left my job and I had this new journey to follow, and it wasn't just making videos on the side, it was my new career. I asked myself that question a lot. And I asked myself, what do you like to do? And I feel like my answer when I used to work corporate was always, oh, my hobby, it's content creation. And I realized I was stuck in a loop where I was working and my hobby was working. And what I did for fun was working. And when the weather was bad and I was stuck inside, I would work. And I feel like this new career path has definitely challenged me to figure out, okay, who are you and what do you like? And a lot of that thinking went back to, okay, when society didn't exist and paying bills as an adult didn't exist and you had a day off from school, what would you be so excited to have a whole day to do? And for me, that was reading, that was watching movies, that was playing dress up with my Barbies, that was reading magazines. And I feel like now there's kind of a modern version of all of those. For me, the magazines is like Pinterest instead of physical copies of magazines. And of course, the playing dress up with Barbies is dressing myself up. And I love to read now again. And it took a while for me to find out my hobbies again and what made me unique, like you said. And I really feel like it takes a lot of thinking. You really just have to sit there and think, if I could do anything right now, if I could do anything to stop being stressed, what would I do? And I feel like that's a really good guide to start getting into a groove of, what do you like to do? What are your hobbies? Because I feel like on social media, we're hit with so many different, we have access to so many different people's lives in seconds. And if we get bored of one, we have millions of others. And I feel like I sometimes get stuck in a loop of comparison of like, should I be doing that? And then I see someone that I would consider has a productive life. And I'd be like, oh, mine doesn't look like that. I need to change everything that I'm doing. And I feel like we start to lose that uniqueness a little bit when we start comparing ourselves. Because of course, comparison is the thief of joy. That's what I try and tell myself every single day when I get stuck in a loop like that. So my favorite thing to do, my favorite way to kind of see what I like is, again, just what did I like as a kid? What did I like in middle school when nothing mattered? And what did I like in high school when I got my first car and I was like, I can drive anywhere. Where was that anywhere? Where was I so excited to go? Where was I dying to be when there was no school or there was a random day off? Or we were just talking about snow days. We had hurricane days. So what would I do on these hurricane days when I was just stuck at home with my family?
I love that. I'm really sorry to interrupt, but did you know that YouTube is the world's second biggest search engine? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but that's why every creator truly needs to be using vidIQ to grow their YouTube channel. vidIQ's tech helps you tailor your video ideas to match what people are searching for right now on YouTube. And once you're ready to upload, well, it starts optimizing and getting you all the details that you need to make sure your videos are getting noticed. If you really want to dive in more and get started for free, please head over to thewomenofyoutube.com/vidIQ to get started on this YouTube channel changing tool that is going to make things so much easier for you. All right, let's get
on. What was some of the first stuff that you created for yourself and for like this trajectory for yourself to move forward?
It's really funny because it could not be further from what I do right now. But the way that I really started was in 2020, peak of the pandemic. School had just, I was in college and they said, you're not coming back. We don't know for how long. So I knew, prepared myself, and I was like, okay, I'm going to be home a lot. What can I do at home? So the first couple things that I created were very colorful edits with like PixArt and playing with all the free elements and the stickers. So for example, I would add a random rainbow to my old photos. I cracked out the iPad. I would start drawing on my photos with Procreate. And if I was wearing a yellow shirt, I'd be like, okay, this one is like a sunny theme. And I really loved the artistic element of it. It was very like art. That's what I would say my old content was. This was before video was super popping, at least. So I started very just static, creatively over-edited, I would say now, because now that I look back, it was very obvious. I once edited the Eiffel Tower outside the window of my college apartment, and I thought I sold it. I was very confident about it. Now I look back at it and I'm like, no one thought you were in Paris. It's okay. No one believed it. But it was fun. And I feel like that's how I got like the fun out. I got the itch out. I was like, let me do whatever I want, because we're all stuck at home. We all want to be somewhere else. We all want to have a super sunny day with rainbows. Let me just edit it. Let me like create that reality. And that's where I got started, of course, completely opposite spectrum right now, but it was fun. I think back to those days and I'm like, I had a lot of fun. That's the important part.
Mm-hmm. I love this. It's, so when I think back to like the first video content I made, it was for a science project my sophomore year of high school. So this had to be 2001. Like I had this, my dad had this old camcorder that we'd had for years. And we had a project that we were doing about genetics and stuff. And I decided to dig into my project about like DNA genetics, where you could like basically like make the baby you want. Like I want my baby to have blue eyes and blonde hair, yeah, and or to be this curly hair, like whatever it was. And so I did it from this genetics episode, and I had Barbie as like my main character. Like she was doing it, and I gave her a southern accent, and I talked it all out, and we did all these different, like I had all these, it was so bad, but it was like got an A in the project because I did a video presentation and taught things and did this kind of stuff. And I just remember always having an actual like camera, like with film in my hand for everything that I was doing throughout high school and doing all of this like creating stuff. And it was just, I just wanted to capture moments, because if moments are so monumental in your life, and you never know when you're going to like capture a moment that was so impactful or life-changing or monumental to someone that I was like doing, like taking a picture of, like, or for myself. And that's like, okay, now I think it's so interesting because we all have cameras now and we're always capturing things excessively and we never look back and reflect. But now that I'm a mom and I look back on things and I can see like old Facebook memories. Yes, I use Facebook, but I use Facebook memories. And I see like my kids growing up and videos and things that they do. Cause like when I was in those moments, like they seem so big to me. And now I look and I'm like, oh my God, they were so small. And so it's just being yourself in like those moments. And like, and I'm working really hard to bring moments to life for people. So like, you know, in this podcast, when we're 200 episodes, like tell us the moments and the things that have happened to you that we can learn from. It's so funny how like those foundational pieces that we didn't realize were defining us, mm-hmm, is what makes us the great creators that we are. And figuring that out is so important. So, okay. So one of the things, like how you came into my life is from my favorite social network, which is LinkedIn, which I know so many people poop all over and they should not, because it is where it's at, y'all. It is where it's at. But you recently did a post that was talking about like, one, it was like your wish list of like brands that you want to work with, but you also had this whole year of brands that you worked with in 2023, you know, like Ruggable, T-Turtle, Parade, Halle Hair, Aldo Shoes, 1-800 Flowers, like Chic Soul. Like there's so many cool brands and cool campaigns that you were a part of. I would really love to know how you were able to like get onto these partnerships, be with these sponsors and stuff, because I know we as creators, we're always trying to figure out how can we find the right people to align with our brand that will pay us to create for them. So if you could share your insights, your journey, we would be so grateful.
Absolutely. I love that you mentioned LinkedIn, because I feel like, again, we're obsessed with it. It's underrated. If people want to say that it's a bad platform, more for us, right? Because we know the power of it. And I feel like for me, my corporate background definitely instilled a lot of confidence in me and almost gave me those inside secrets almost, because I was the one doing the hiring. I was hiring influencers. I was creating the campaigns themselves. I was working with the brands. I would be on the calls with the clients. I could directly hear their likes, their dislikes. I reviewed the content. I would see the difference in my feedback versus the feedback from the brand themselves. So I learned a lot. And I would say the first couple of years, especially the Pixar years, as I mentioned, I wasn't making a ton of money, but I have always been monetizing. From my very first year that I created these Pixar edits and decided, let me take this seriously, I was making money. So I feel like the biggest thing that I've learned is, again, we talked about just sticking to being you, because everything is always changing. And I feel like, especially when I go on a professional platform like LinkedIn, I read a lot of articles, I hear a lot of opinions. And the one thing that everyone's saying is everything is changing. And it's funny because how can everything be changing all of the time? It gets to a point where everything changed so much, we're back to where we were 3 years ago. So it's really just a cycle. It isn't really this dramatic change every single day. But the biggest thing that I've been hearing and I've been learning is that these campaigns want to activate more unique creators. They want to hire people that will be memorable. And I feel like before my first couple of years, I was really focusing on working for the brand instead of making the brand work for me. That's something that I've learned a lot.
That's a powerful sentence. Tell us more about that.
I think the biggest thing for me was these early years, I was thinking, okay, like I need to stand out to these brands. If I want to work with, just looking at something simple, modern, like the water bottle, right? I need to drink out of this every single day. And I need to tell people, this is my favorite water bottle. I love this. Then you realize you're doing 365 days of free advertising and the brand doesn't care. The brand wants to hire you. The brand doesn't want to hire someone obsessed with their product, which I am obsessed with Simple Modern, but I don't need to share that every single day to know that I can attract them because I want to be unique. So that's something that I learned a lot with the aesthetic itself. I was told a million and one times, you can't do all pink. That's ridiculous. Who's going to hire you wearing a ball gown if they're a food brand? And it almost reverse psychology worked on me because I was like, let me show you. And I feel like the biggest thing was I was starting to incorporate this aesthetic in my campaigns. I would ask the brand partners that trusted me the most, and I would just say, can you trust me on this one? Super happy to do a round two if you need me to, but can you just trust me on this one? Because you wouldn't think toothpaste would work with something like my aesthetic, but I always make it work. And then the campaign that comes out of it is something, again, really unique. It makes the audience stop in their tracks. They're like, what is this? She's brushing her teeth in a ball gown. It sticks. It's memorable. People will then remember the product, buy the product, ask me questions about it because I drew them in. So I stopped focusing on what does the brand want? Let me follow this brief exactly to the T. They gave me an example. Let me just mimic it. It's more like I know myself. They went through my socials when they went to hire me. They know who I am too, if they did a good job at their job. So they should trust me. They should know what I'm doing on a daily basis. And even worse, I'm not going to create a brand campaign that sticks out and is completely opposite of what I do every day. Because then everyone's going to be like, what is this? I don't know why she's doing this. This isn't what she does every single day. So my mentality shifted from don't work for the brand, make them work for you. This is a mutual partnership. This isn't the brand is paying me and suddenly I have to drop everything because it's mutual. They're paying me, but I built this audience from the ground up. No one paid me to do that. So it is a mutual thing. And I started kind of releasing that mentality of the brand runs everything and just turned it into more of a relationship. I get to know the brand. I get to know my contact. If they're in LA, I try to meet them in person. I try to just build a relationship. I'm like, we're working together, hopefully for a really long time, not just this one time. I want you to trust me. I want to trust you. I want to know your likes, your dislikes. I'm never one to miss deadlines or miss emails. I really like staying on top of things because I want to show them I take this seriously. This is my career now. Like I was saying earlier, this isn't just a weekend hobby anymore. This is what I do and this is my life. And I feel like that just naturally exuded a confidence that I got to work with all of these incredible brands. And from one sharing one, then another brand comes along, trusts me, and is able to see the past work that I've done. And I feel like you're doing right now, you kind of give it an overall scroll. You can kind of see like the aesthetic, the vibe is the same, but really it wasn't forcing much. It's just, if I do wear something, let me wear pink. If I do feature parts of my home, let me feature the pinkest parts. And that way it stays on brand. And I feel like this, the UGC that you just scrolled past, the static one, this is from back in the day, as I would call it. And it still looks like something I would do today. So it's something that I really want to emphasize to people that you don't always have to follow trends, because what happens is trends become outdated. And if they don't speak to you, it's going to be really uncomfortable to continue following them or look back at your work and see, I can't show any of this because I don't like any of this and I don't want to create anything related to this. So my focus was just making sure everything blended in seamlessly with my organic content, my everyday content. And as you're scrolling, there's been an ad and then there's been another one and you can't really point them out. And that's my favorite part. I really try and focus frame by frame. Is this going to look drastically different from what I do every single day? And it doesn't. And that's what I love. That's what I absolutely love. So I feel like, again, that uniqueness is also my focus for my brand partners. And just naturally, they come to me, they trust me. And as my platforms grow, of course, I get to monetize a lot more. And it's been really exciting to see that I get to just continue to do what I love, even through work, because you look at these brand campaigns and they're the work part of things. And this is just what I get to do for brands and not for brands. And it's never different. And that's what I really, really enjoy, that I get to just do me every single day.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing I love, because, you know, if you're watching this on Spotify, like, I pulled up her accounts. I had her really cute portfolio that she has. It's very simple and elegant and to the point, which I think is hugely beneficial. Then we also pulled up like her TikTok and her Instagram. And there's something that's really noticeable, like, out the bat. And this is the, like, content creator nerd in me. And it's that what you have on TikTok and what you have on Instagram are so different. And like, they are made specifically for those platforms. Like, it's a lot more photos, some real stuff that's happening over on Insta, and maybe that you have repurposed from your TikTok. And then your TikTok is like very like, this is what's happening. It's also important to note too that you are not swimming in millions of followers. Have 87,000 followers on TikTok and you have 20,000 followers on Instagram. And I think that that's amazing. Those are great numbers. I don't have that. It's great. And like I said, it's very specific about being you and what you are about. Like I said, you have specific boxes that you hit that make you appealing to brands, that you are a lifestyle creator, that you are Latina, that you live in LA, that like you're plus size, you know, like there's specific things like where brands know, I think, like whether to work with you. Like, I don't think that, you know, like a VPN company is going to come seek you out because it doesn't make sense for like their brand to work with like this pink content creator. So it allows for you to attract the right people into your sphere of excellence and brilliance. And then you can tell that, you know, you go places and you do things, and it's kind of like turning your life into a feed. So this is going to come to my, I have a question I want to ask later about like having your life be online all the time, but I want to first ask a question, which is like, how, by being someone, like by defining who you are and what you're about, you know, Latina, pink, all that kind of stuff, how have you been able to get these brand deals? Like, do you have a company you work with that's like a management? Do you seek these out directly? Are you sending pitches? Like, how, what is that part of getting these brand sponsorship deals for you?
I love sharing the tea because I feel like there's a little bit of tea when it comes to this.
I'm drinking tea, so this is perfect.
Perfect. I've only done one management trial, and ultimately I've decided I work for me and that works for now. I never want to put a forever stamp on anything, but I don't like the disconnect. I don't like thinking that someone else is running things for me. And again, that works incredibly for a lot of people. And a lot of people crave a dynamic like that because they're doing something else. They don't want to do the emails. They don't want to do the negotiations. But again, I'm such a community person. I'm such a people person. I love emailing brands. I love getting rejected because I don't care. I'm like, great, we won't work together this time. Who are you as a person? I still try and get to know the brand. I don't just like delete email thread and forget them forever. I love having 20 brands in my inbox every single day, even if only one is going to work out, because I'm like, this is cool. I got on their radar. I don't care if they don't have money. I don't care if we can't work together this time. I don't care if their terms are ridiculous. I got on their radar and I get to talk to them. And that alone is a privilege. And giving that up to a management team, an agent, representation would hurt me so much, because I'm like, that's the fun part for me. Like, yes, I love creating the content, of course. You would think, let's get that off your plate so you can focus more on creating content. But I don't want that off my plate personally. And I haven't found any management or any company that kind of lets you in as much as I want to be let in. I'm like, I want to micromanage my career. Like, I want to be in the, it's my career. If something doesn't work out and the management.
It's not just your career. It's like your life, your image, your like defining things of who you are.
Exactly.
So go ahead.
No, you first.
Well, it's just, I find it so interesting because we're in such an interesting era in the creator economy. And I know that you're not as active on YouTube as you are with TikTok and Instagram, but you know, we're in kind of like that quit era with YouTube, where like so many of these big creators, mainly men, are quitting YouTube because I really personally believe that they built their brands and their businesses wrong. They built a brand and a business that solely is dependent upon them. And they also didn't put the right systems in place so that they can focus on what they do, which is being creative, versus like the other parts that go with owning a business, which is money, operations and sales. Like those are three other parts that go along with like marketing and creative work. And like they all kind of have to work together. And I feel like eventually, in order for creators to have success that's scalable, they one have to get systems in place and people in place to help them with offsetting some of those tasks that keep them from creative work. And two, they also have to find a way to build a brand that exists outside of their name and their face. And that I think is much easier said than done, especially in a creator space where like it's people's face that stop the thumb scroll and what they're doing. But it's interesting. And so I find it really interesting that you said that like you want, like you're so active and intertwined in what you're doing with your brand. And I want to ask the question is like, is the reason that that's like that for you is because you haven't reached that part in your business, like you're comfortable, ready, and needing to let go of those pieces, and you're happy with where you are, and you're not looking for like that next level of growth that having a team and stuff gives you?
I think I just like being involved in it, and I feel like the conversations that I have had with teams, it's never stuck out to me that I'm still a priority when talking to these brands, because they paint it to you as, let me take this off your plate. But again, it's not that I'm not busy enough for it, because I would love to have those 2, 3, 4 hours a day back that I spend in my inbox, digging through my inbox, making connections, talking to people. But it's just so important to me for the brands to know who I am as a creator. And I, for example, am dropping fun facts about myself in emails. I ask the brand teams how their weekend was. I ask them how their kids are, if I know that their kids exist by now. I ask them how their dog is. I ask them how their vacation was. When I get an out-of-office responder, I write it down. And I remember they were out of office last week. If it was for a vacation, let me ask them how it was. I like having that relationship. I've been to a lot of offices and I've met a lot of people in person in LA, and I like to make that mark for myself. For me, it's not all about the brand deal. Like, again, like I said, if the brand deal can't work out, invite me to your office. Let's go to lunch. Let's still get to know each other, because just because you're an agency where the client didn't have the money, or you're an entry-level coordinator where the budget just didn't exist and it's out of your control, it's not your fault that the budget didn't exist, I don't want to just write them off. And I feel like that personal connection just wouldn't happen if I had someone else managing different elements for me, which again, not putting a forever stamp on it. There might be the perfect person, the perfect team out there. But through what I've looked through right now, I think I like being the one behind all of that. And on the flip side, for Fluent and Pink, the community, I've floated the idea of having an intern, having someone help me out, more so to give them experience, not that I necessarily need the help. I'm always open to having more people in my world. I just know how I am, and I know my likes and my dislikes. And I just feel like I work better on my own. I'm an only child. I feel like I have to drop that little tidbit of information in there, because it all makes sense once you know that about me. But I feel like it's not about the time, it's not about the connections that a different team might have and might bring me. It's like I pride myself so much in making those on my own and getting to know people, instead of saying like, nice to meet you, here's my team, and then I never speak to you again, because they literally handle everything else until it's done. I just feel like that's my fear. I don't want to lose that.
I can understand that. And like, I'm with you. I love to network. Like I go to tons of events. I joke a lot. I'm like, I work by myself in my basement. Like I need to socialize with the outside world. I'm very extroverted. And so it just comes one of those things that I like being able to go to events and network with people and meet people a lot. And I know a lot of my peers are like, oh, I don't want to travel. It's so far. I don't know if I'm going to get anything out of it. It's money, blah, 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 blah. Like, you know what? No. Like, go to the things. Go talk to the people. Like, one of the things I get so, like, mad about is I talk to creators, and they're like, I don't want to go to VidCon because VidCon is for fans. And I'm like, did you forget what you do?
Who built you?
Not understand that, like, Fans are what make this possible. Yes, you might not be attracting swarms of teenage girls and little kids and families. Like, that might not be your brand. And, like, I respect that. But seeing how creators that can bring people out into the real world and do stuff and interact and engage and get so hyped about people that make crap in their basements and in their bedrooms is huge. Like, you just, I feel like people just forget that. And I'm like, on top of it, the networking at VidCon, both of them, VidCon East and VidCon LA, are amazing. Like, the creator floor, the industry floor, like, if you can spurge on the ticket and get the industry pass and, like, get into all the rooms where shit happens, like, you will be so surprised at how much you get out of that. And I'm just a lowly little education creator with this podcast that talks to women. And, like, people are just, like, the relationships and the sponsorships, the partnerships I'm able to get from that. If I did what you did, like, I would have been able to, like, buy me a mansion in LA, like, with, like, how much I do this stuff. Like, so I love your personalization of, like, how you network and stuff. And LinkedIn is a great place to do that. Like, LinkedIn is the cheat code, in my opinion, for a lot of that stuff. So, like, bravo. We're getting really good over in our interview, but I want to take a minute to remind you that we now have a new home for the Women of Video community. You can head over to Patreon right now, and we have the link in our show notes that you can go find it there, where we're going to be able to have after show information. We're going to have chats. We're going to have information and just come together to answer questions and connect and support each other as creators. This whole creator thing can be really confusing and can be really lonely. So let's come together to support each other like the badass women that we are. Head over to patreon.com/womenofvideo to get started now. So I had said I wanted to come back to this question. Your life is on public display on social. Who you are on social is who you are in life. How do you balance that, manage that, do that? And yeah, that's the question.
Boundaries, 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 boundaries. It's my favorite word in the world. I apply it to social media. I apply it to my personal life. I'm telling my friends all the time. It's like, it's just a one word. It's a sentence. I'm like, boundaries. And they already know what I'm going to say and where I'm coming from and what I mean. And I think that in this day and age where everyone is like, do the Get Ready With Me content, do the daily vlogs, go live for 24 hours. You have to for growth. I'm here. I have never posted daily vlogs for 7 days straight because part of me is like, this would be boring. I just like sit at my computer for 4 hours and then I eat and then I sleep. But also, I don't feel the need to. I don't think that my audience would gain any benefit from it. Sure, an inside look at my life is great. I'll post one vlog. But I personally don't sit there and film every second of every day. I allow myself, guys, I wear sweatpants. I allow myself to wear sweatpants every now and then because it's not going to be on camera. I'm not going to record every second of my life. I feel like also with the Get Ready With Me that I mentioned, I'm not sitting there sharing personal details about my life. Not that I'm shaming anyone that does. I'm just paranoid. And I'm like, have I said that on the internet? I don't remember. And then if a random person knows something about me, I'm like, did you look me up or did I accidentally say that? And then I spiral. So I definitely share a lot. Of course, I'm not saying like I put on a mask and this is a new personality. But I have boundaries with what I do share because as I get bigger and bigger and bigger, I'm a public figure, right? People can look things up. There's certain personal information that is public, unfortunately, and it's just going to happen one day where someone finds something. And I just don't want to make it easier for them to find certain information about me, my family. Not that there's any like huge secrets, but just that it's good to have privacy. And I think that that's really important. I think that you're in control in social media. And I think even with posting every single day and even with filming my videos every single day, and even if I do vlogs and if I vlog a whole vacation or something, I know, post it once you get home. Make sure that there's nothing distinguishable in the back. When I take a picture of my coffee, I'm like, street signs. Have you ever said that this coffee shop is 5 minutes from your house? Because now they can see the street. That's 5 minutes from your house. And I put myself in a little loop like that where I'm like, let me just double check everything before I post it. Was my credit card just hanging out? My license hanging out? A baby picture of me just hanging out? I can tell you off the top of my head, the 4 baby pictures of me that are on the internet. That's it. Like, I know what's out there and I know what's not. And if something ever comes up that I'm like, I didn't post that, I am confident in myself that I'm like, I didn't slip up. And I feel like it's a little annoying, of course, because you're like, I have to double check everything. Or like, sometimes you do want to share this like really crazy thing that happened to you in your personal life, but it's just not worth it. It's not worth the panic that it'll cause when it's too much information. It's not worth the panic of if I say it on TikTok live, I'm like, shoot, was anyone recording that? Because a lot of people love to screen record live videos now. And it's just, I'm such an anxious person at nature that I'm like, I don't need to add to my plate. Let me be in control. And I'm like, I can post 7 times a day about my outfits. That still isn't my entire life on the internet, if that makes sense.
No, I feel like you've curated the version that people need to know. And that honestly is also your business. Like those are the, like you found the intersection between the two. Your life is on social media, but it's a specific window that you are opening up to people. They don't get access like to the whole house of you. And I think that's important to distinguish. And I'm sure that figuring that out was a journey. And all of the little things you talked about are super important. And again, I would argue those are things that dudes don't have to worry about. I love that breakdown so that we can, again, learn from it and know, like, figuring that out. Because I know for me, like, as I pivot into my year, and one of the things I have on my bucket list of things to do for this year is I want to start a personal YouTube channel, because your girl has been through some ish, and I feel like it's important to share the ish and the tea to help other women with their going through. And it's very specifically talking to, like, moms and wives, like, 30 to 45, like it's a specific bracket of person, because it has a lot to do with like the things I think that women who are married and have kids deal with a lot. And things like, do I still love my husband? Why does moms only talk about their kids? Why is it so freaking hard to find friends as an adult? Like there's just a lot of things like to dig into and stories and stuff, because that's who I am. I'm a person that likes to help people solve their problems through my tragic and wild experiences.
But, no, I completely get that.
Yeah. And so it's a whole thing. So, all right. So we've talked about so many awesome things. One of the things that we have not really dug into though is the business of being Molly. So can you tell us about like the brand and business that you're building, like where your revenue streams are coming from, all that tea, please?
Yes. So first couple years, again, 2020 was really like my start. So I mark it as like, this is the fourth year, right? My first 2 years, I would say it was just brand deals. I was like, let me see what comes in. I have a corporate job, not too worried about the money. But of course, last year when I made that huge life change of pivoting to full-time being a creator, being whatever I am, I'm full-time me. That's the easiest way to say it. And I feel like I really needed to think like, okay, this needs to be sustainable. And what are you not in control of? The brand deals that come in. So I was craving consistency, because I was like, I am going to go nuts. Even if I get one brand deal that covers all my bills for 5 months, I'm still like, but what about next month? Because I hate inconsistency. I hate being too confident in one brand deal, right? I feel like the biggest thing for creators is like looking outside of that. Like, what can you do to bring some consistency in your life? So what I've been focusing on, my pivot for this year, I'm definitely going to start applying digital products and things that I guess I would normally not share on social media. Like, for example, I love graphic design. I used to do it freelance when I was in college, and it's just not something that I can make a TikTok about, because it's just not something that I talk about, but I can absolutely apply that kind of on the quiet side. And I feel like a lot of people think that if they sell something, if they work on another stream of income, it needs to be something that you would share on social media. And I think it's really the opposite. It's like, what's that one thing that you don't make videos about, but you're really good at? Can you monetize that? And right now with Fluent in Pink, for example, a lot of my events come at a ticket fee. And of course, the money that I do make is just going back into the business itself, because I'm building it from the ground up. It launched in August. It's very early stages. But again, there is some opportunity for revenue to come out of that. I think that for brand deals specifically, I try and focus on how can I make these consistent? Can we work on a monthly basis? I make sure that I follow up with all of my brand partners as well to remind them that I exist. And for example, at the end of last year, I went from 7K to 20K in a month or two on Instagram. I had a huge growth spurt on Reels. The brands, it's not their job to look at my page every single day because they have millions of creators that they're looking at and that they're working with. So when I hit that growth spurt, I just reminded everyone, I'm like, hey, I exist. How's everyone doing? I have all these new followers. They're all real. I didn't buy them. I swear. I back it up with my media kit in my portfolio. And reminding them that I exist sometimes gets a campaign out of it. And it's really cool to see that because I'm not one to hide the fact that having a TikTok with 80K and then an Instagram with 7K was a little weird, especially with campaigns where I was on TikTok and then had to do stories. I know I was passed on a lot of opportunities because my platforms are just so drastically different. So now that they're kind of a little bit more on par and leveling together, it makes me really happy that I get to monetize even further on Instagram, on UGC campaigns, which is something that I've been focusing on a lot too. When a brand doesn't have enough budget for me to post, I remind them that there's always the option that I can make a video for them. And that shaves off so much from my rate because a lot of my rate are the 80,000 people that are going to see my video. So right now, TLDR, it's mostly brand deals, of course, but then UGC is a big element in there. Digital products are going to be a big element there. My in-person events for Fluent in Pink, not my personal business, and a little bit of commission. I am really bad with LTK. It stresses me out. I know that it's a powerhouse. I know that I should probably be doing it. If I did it well, I feel like I could give up brand deals for 12 months straight, but I can't. It stresses me out so much. So I'm trying to get a little bit better at that too, because of course I have codes with a bunch of different companies. I have them all in my link in bio. Whenever I wear something, I just remind people. I don't try and be too salesy, but I'm like, why wouldn't you want to save some money? I'm giving you the opportunity to save some money. There's a lot of power in commission too, which I feel like I used to ignore because again, I had a full-time job that needed me full-time. So I didn't really get to think about all these little tiny things that can bring consistency to such a inconsistent sounds like a negative word. It is an inconsistent career, but not in a bad way. It's so fun. Like you never know what tomorrow can bring. I feel like I experienced that a lot last year when I was getting a lot of Barbie related campaigns and brand deals that Mattel had to approve and the Barbie team had to approve. It's like, it was so cool. I would just wake up and I'm like, Barbie's in my inbox again. This is like a dream come true. I really need to like focus on this.
I love that you got to do like, there's, I mean, when you think about it, like you talk about like your Barbie like time, it's like, could there really have been any better alignment for like what you've done?
And then Marco Robbie said no Barbie too. And I was like, Marco, do it for me. Please do it for me. I need a Barbie too.
It's just so many funny things. So many great things. Oh my gosh. Molly, this has been so fun, so insightful, so helpful, so just all of the things. It's been a pleasure getting to talk with you and your journey. And I know that it's just the beginning for you. And I can't wait to continue to connect with you on LinkedIn. We'll have the links to all of Molly's stuff over in our show notes at womenofvideo.com. Remember, you and everyone listening are impossibly amazing. Until next time, peace.
Thank you for listening to the Women of YouTube podcast.
We would love to know what you thought about this latest episode. So make sure to tag us with hashtag Women of YouTube with your thoughts.